Welcome to the FinTech One-on-One podcast. This is Peter Renton, Chairman and Co-Founder of FinTech Nexus. I've been doing this show since 2013, which makes this the longest-running one-on-one interview show in all of FinTech. Thank you for joining me on this journey. If you like this podcast, you should check out our sister shows, the FinTech Blueprint with Lex Sokolin and FinTech Coffee Break with Isabel Castro, or listen to everything we produce by subscribing to the FinTech Nexus podcast channel. Before we get started, I want to remind you about our comprehensive news service. FinTech Nexus News not only covers the biggest FinTech news stories, our daily newsletter delivers the most important FinTech stories into your inbox every morning, with special commentary on the top story of the day. Stay on top of FinTech news by subscribing at news.fintechnexus.com/subscribe. Today on the show, I'm delighted to welcome Jeffrey Rogers. He is the CEO and founder of Lyft Forward. Now, Lyft Forward's a super interesting company. They have created this FinTech infrastructure that's really embedded finance for brands, merchants, and banks, and bringing those parties together in a unified system. It's not easy. He describes, obviously, in detail how he's able to do that and some of the leading brands globally that they're working with today. And we obviously talk about how that all works. We talk about the demographic changes in the world and how that's kind of changing the way consumers are purchasing things and the impact that that's having on Lyft Forward. We talk about their partnership with MasterCard and what that means. We talk about their international business and how they went international very early on in their development and what that meant for their company at the time and what it means now. We also obviously talk about how they make money, the scale they're at, and Jeffrey provides his vision for the future of the company. It was a fascinating discussion. Hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to the podcast, Jeffrey.
Great. Thanks, Peter. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So let's get started by giving the listeners a little bit of background about yourself. I know you've been doing Lyft Forward for a while now, but tell us some of the highlights of your career before that.
It's been a while. It's been a bit of a journey. It's been over 10 years at the company, but before that, I have a pretty mixed background. I have a mix of, aside from entrepreneurship, law and finance. So I actually am a JD MBA. Actually, I had a short stint practicing law for a bank. And then I moved into investment banking and worked on Wall Street a couple of years before finding my passion of building companies.
Okay. Why don't you tell us the sort of the impetus to launch Lyft Forward back 10 plus years ago now. What's the founding story?
I was running a pretty sizable company at the time. And this was during a major liquidity crunch in the country. And banks started to pull back just because there weren't a lot of banks got very conservative. And this was at kind of the height of the fintech boom, right? It's kind of which led a lot of companies like Lyft Forward to come out to try to fill in that gap to provide funding to both consumers and small businesses. And when we came out, what we tried to do is focus just at the time on small businesses, because if you remember, this is back in 2013, there was a lot of already action around a consumer. And we saw that small businesses still needed a way to get capital efficiently. And there were some companies out there like OnDAC that had kind of a funding platform that small businesses could apply directly. But we tried to do something different where we wanted to work with OEMs and manufacturers that were providing actually tools and devices to small businesses and try to find funding around how do we get these tools in their hands with a funding mechanism, but in a time that would take you to underwrite a consumer. So basically adding tech around financing, working with OEMs. That's really what's kind of the grand vision of how we started. And then as we dove deeper into it, we learned that around this whole ecosystem of providing financing kind of within with OEMs, a lot of this is done through either vendors or retailers, and that there was a whole need for a tech solution that really could integrate all of the interested parties in so that you can have a smooth transaction. And that really kind of brought us fast forward to where we are today.
Right, right. It's interesting, yeah, because I remember when we first came across you guys, I think it was actually Jeff Miller from GLI. That's a blast from the past, I know. I think he was the person who introduced us originally. But and you were doing, like you said, the small business marketplace. So it's been really interesting watching you kind of evolve over the last decade. So maybe you can sort of talk about what is the core product suite today? What are you actually offering?
You know, maybe, Peter, if we can back up and take a case study.
Sure.
One of our largest clients, Microsoft, they've been a client for years, but we have a number of programs with them. But one of the more recent ones is with a division called Xbox, which a lot of people may know from the gaming, but they have a gaming device. They also have software. They have accessories. And before we came along, Xbox was just sold through retailers. And if the retailer offered financing, great, but they didn't really know how the end customer would be able to consume the product if they wanted some type of financing. So they said we wanted to take control over that because they really cared about the customer experience and how they got the product home and how they use it and how they paid for it. So they said, we're going to put together a subscription, but we are a, you know, multinational company. So we're going to put this together initially in 15 countries. So we need a tech solution that will allow that the customer, no matter if they're in Sweden, Italy, or the US, when they apply, they have the same experience. But in that experience, we wanted to include one, that the different accessories that we sell around the world that they can attach. Two, that they be able to get financing for this. And we're going to dictate kind of how we want that financing to look around the world. And three, once they plug that machine in, all the software that comes with this subscription will get digitally attached. And that's what essentially we provided. So that was kind of the need. And then the solution is our, you know, what we call now, it's kind of fast forward, our embedded finance platform. Right. So what we do, so for every retailer that they sell Xbox in, we go and we integrate it in with the retailer. For every region that they're in, we integrate it in with a bank or multiple banks that finance those transactions. And then for every third party that need to touch that transaction, like, for example, this is sold as a subscription. So you're meant to own this device for 24 or 34 months. You send it back. And then for the new iteration of that model, you're sent a new device. So the 3PL that takes that device back is also integrated into our platform. So all this information flows to all the parties when they need to have it, but everyone gets the same information and the customer has the same experience around the world when they consume the product.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. So can we just back up a second? And I'm curious about how you were able to get into Microsoft. You're a small company. Microsoft's one of the largest companies on the planet. How are you able to kind of convince them to go with a little fintech company?
Yeah, well, we didn't start with Xbox. We started with a smaller device in Microsoft in the kind of with their Surface product.
I remember that. Yeah.
You know, Microsoft at the time had 100 retail stores around the US, and they had one in the UK as well. And so we integrated our tech solution in those retail stores. But they essentially sent out an RFP and went out to their constituents to find the best tech solution. And fortunately, you know, we won. I think a lot of it was at the beginning, especially since we were starting off. This is back in 2013. We were able to build kind of a flexible solution as to what they wanted rather than someone that had something out of the box that didn't fit. And then from there, we've kind of molded into this, you know, embedded finance for lending, if you will. We've learned that we're able to build a core software platform that works for, you know, almost every brand now.
All of these transactions have to have a lender behind them. Do you kind of come in with this package that includes access to, you know, to bank finance or some other kind of financing?
We can now that we have a number of lenders around the world on the platform. We can. Typically with some of the brands we work with, they want their own lenders, and sometimes it's done with an RFP. So, for example, we partner with RBC in Canada for IKEA. We won that RFP, but that's a situation where, you know, IKEA wanted RBC and we were RBC's partner in Canada for that transaction. So I say it varies. We can bring the bank, but in a lot of the brands we work with, they have relationships already with banks, so they bring them.
Right. Okay. Okay. And so it seems to me it's a complex solution, because you've got, on one hand, you've got Microsoft, and the other hand, you've got the retailer, where they're actually purchasing the product, which have their own systems, and then you've got the lender on the back end. I mean, like, do you have to go and get all these pieces together? I mean, like, absolutely. How does it all come together?
So, you know, we work with the tech teams in each of, you know, for the retailers we work with, there's a, you know, huge tech team that integrate these programs in. At the bank, there's a tech team that we're, and with some banks that we're closely working with, like, you know, on a Citizens or an RBC, our tech teams are constantly working together, improving the product and adding new programs. So, you know, I would say for a lot of this, the hard work has already been done, because once you have the integration in, it's good. Now there's always an upgrade and things to change, but getting those first integrations in were difficult. But for like a lot of the major retailers around the world, we have that integration completed.
Right. Okay. It's interesting to me, because you're kind of, with your embedded finance product, it's almost like a subscription type product that you're offering here. You know, a lot of the new generation, they're used to paying subscriptions. They don't necessarily like to pay on credit card. I'd love to get your perspective on the demographic change that are driving the growth in what you guys are doing.
It's partly financial, but also another part is that it's just a mentality standpoint of, for items over a certain amount, they just don't see why they need to pay a full amount for it, right? They're even if there's a device involved, they want to pay for, they consider it a service. So they just want to pay for the device and the service that may come with it, and pay on a monthly basis. That's really what's driving how they want to consume it. And if you look at the end of this year, you're going to see some like for consumer transactions online, we're going to reach over like $6 trillion. It's absolutely massive. If you look at the SMB world, and this is SMB, if they're buying with some type of financing, some call it device as a service, but it's subscription as well, you're looking at over, you know, $300 billion. So those numbers are growing at, you know, great clips. You know, on the SMB side, it's 40% on a CAGR, and then, you know, 100% on the consumer side. So a lot of that drives, I want, you know, subscription and monthly payments. And just the level set, you know, like our platform really, if you look at kind of all of these installment loans, right? And then under installment loans, you can have buy now, pay later, where you're just paying a smaller term, right? It's 3 or 4 payments. And or you can have what we call split payments, general finance, where you have, it could be a longer term, but you're not going to own a device. And then, you know, to the third, we put subscription, whereas you're paying for a certain term, you want to return a device at the end and start the process all over again.
Do you do all of that?
Yeah, we do. We do all of that. So depending upon the client, you know, there might not be need for a subscription. It's more just a finance. So the work we do with RBC, with IKEA, is just finance, where Xbox is a subscription.
I'm interested in your partnership with MasterCard. I saw that you're part of their Engage Partner Network. Maybe you could explain what that is and why it's important.
Sure. So MasterCard, they're looking to solve two problems here for banks. So, and this is, you know, really a reaction to the boom in buy now, pay later. But it's really expanded, again, as I was trying to explain, to installments, because it includes buy now, pay later, but it could be for longer terms as well. So as we know, there are companies like Klarna in a firm, they've done a great job of offering a buy now, pay later product in their own in-app purchase experience. And then some credit card issuers can offer a post-transaction installment product as well. So after you do a credit card transaction, you probably see it sometimes on your bill, you can pay it over you know, four or five payments instead of paying it all at once, and sometimes interest-free. And what MasterCard Installments does is allow banks to offer it at the point of sale or pre-sale. So for example, you don't see it now a lot, but you'll start to see when you swipe a credit card at a retailer, it will come up and give you options to have it as a regular credit card payment, or you can pay in 1, 2, 3, 4, 12 payments, and you can choose at the point of sale whether or not you want to split it up. The other thing this solves is if banks have want to put together a program with their existing customers, say they have 10,000 customers, and they can go to them and say, hey, you each have $5,000 worth of credit for, and you can pay over, you know, whatever, 6 months for, you know, with no interest, and you can shop at these retailers, then this product allows them to do that. So MasterCard built this technology, Ben, that allows you to do this at the point of sale, and they studied the field and determined that it was easier, instead of banks integrating directly into MasterCard to do this, that if they had technology partners to aid them in this. So we then integrated our technology platform into MasterCard, and then banks can integrate into LiftForward, and it saves them about 80% of the time of integration to offer these products.
Okay, interesting. So then who are some of the banks that you're working with?
On the MasterCard, we don't have any. There are some in transition right now. We don't have any live that's public right now. But RBC and Citizens, we have programs outside of the MasterCard program that we work with. But on the MasterCard side, that's still in the early stages. So we haven't made an announcement on who's coming out first yet with that product.
So I want to talk about embedded finance, because that is something that wasn't really a thing when you started this company, and now it's top of mind for banks, for fintech companies, for brands as well. And I'm curious, like, in your conversations now compared to what they were even 5 years ago, do you go out? Like, I look on your website, your homepage mentions embedded finance right front and center. So does that message now resonate with non-financial companies? Do they get what you're referring to there?
Yeah, I know. I still think it's a term that's very familiar within our world of fintech. Right? So I think we have a little while before that term is, you know, when someone looks at that term and they read it and they realize, okay, this is what they're talking about. And also, even within embedded finance, right, we focus on the lending, but there's a, you know, it still means a few other things, right? It's companies selling insurance. It could be a retailer offering banking services outside of what they normally do through some other third party. So even that term has a lot in it. So I think we still have a ways to go for that become a household term. But what we want people to realize is that really in the purchase flow of when you purchase goods and services, there's going to be some kind of embedded lending in that in the future from our standpoint, right? So, you know, our overarching goal and what we want to see overall is that everything you purchase over a certain amount, of course, that makes sense, that you have that ability to pay over time and to pay in monthly installments. And we want to provide that tech layer both to retailers, banks, and manufacturers to allow that to happen, because that is the trend of, you know, not only technology products, but we see it in home improvement, we're seeing it in travel. Obviously, elective medical care has been out there for a while, but it's still very clunky the way it's offered. So, you know, our goal is to make that easier through tech.
Okay. So then, like, are you a SaaS company? What's your business model? Are you charging transaction fees, origination fees? How do you make money?
Yeah, we make money by transaction fees that come through the platform. We're somewhat of a SaaS model. The bulk of the fees are the transactional fees that come through.
Gotcha. Okay. So I want to go back to something you talked about when you were talking about Microsoft earlier, and you said that they wanted to roll this out in 15 countries. And you sort of were, it looks like you were thrust into the international world pretty early on. I want you to go through and sort of tell us what that's like. I mean, you obviously were motivated with such a big client, but how did you kind of level up to be able to handle expanding beyond the US in your early days?
We went through a lot of transition at that point because we had to make some choices, and this was one of the things that was driving that. So one of the things you may remember at the time is that we also used to fund these transactions ourselves. So we used to borrow from asset managers, some hedge funds, and fund these transactions. But you know, unless you're going to do this at some kind of massive scale, they're really hard to manage these credit funds. And also we were we were locked down. So a lot of our funds, you get approved for kind of where you operate at the time. So we couldn't lend money outside of the US, or we couldn't fund transactions outside the US, but we're going outside the US. So it was basically becoming kind of two businesses if we were going to have these credit facilities. So we ultimately made the choice to ditch the credit facilities and partner instead with banks and financial institutions. And it was a move we had to make if we were going to be international. And it was, one of the best things that we did. So that required a lot of change because, you know, once you have a credit fund, you have also all of the staff and controls in place that normally you would have when you're, you know, funding transaction. And that we had to transition out of that and then add in more engineers to build tech, more people that can handle, you know, international relations, international transactions, dealing with international companies. So that was a big transition for us, but that was necessary for us to be a complete software company in this type of space, and also, you know, set us on a good trajectory as well.
So did you partner with like international banks, or did you have to go and do local banks in each of the different countries, or how did that work?
Yeah, so international banks, and then United, we work with. We even work with Klarna in a couple of countries, BNP, which, you know, in multiple countries. So we did have to go with some international, some local, but mainly we work with the larger banks.
Okay, so can you give us a sense of the scale you guys are at today? Are you growing? I mean, where are you at?
We are growing. I mean, I would, you know, if you look back at COVID was a crazy time, right? Because I think a lot of companies, if they survived it, they went through this crazy, nothing's happening to like, okay, the world's coming back and you have this crazy spike and then it slowed down again. And so now we just see kind of growth again, but there's still a lot of uncertainty in the world. So kind of what's driving our business now is just expansion and I would say the constituents that typically, whether it be banks, retailers, or the brands, seeing the need to offer this, across the globe. So, you know, when you look at last year, we had about 1 billion, I would say 1 billion of GMS go through our software around the globe. We're about, if you split us up, I would say we're probably 50-50 US and then, outside of the country. Mm-hmm. And then my guess is, as we go through this year, we'll probably be more outside of the country than US, just because the expansion is more there. But I think we'll grow about, I would say, 75% over what we did last year.
Right. And so Microsoft is still a big partner today?
They are. When we started back in 2013 with them, we had one program with them, and now we have three with just three different groups that sell, you know, completely three different products. So they're still pretty significant and important. And that relationship continues to grow as well.
So are you then focused on like the big multinational companies like that? Or are you like thinking about where you're trying to get new business from? I mean, there's not many Microsofts in the world. You know, there's lots of brands, obviously. Lots of people could use the infrastructure that you've built. Where are you focusing on?
We still have a few big brands out there to go through and some that are coming on board this year. But you are right. So we were able to build this, I would say, this kind of plug-and-play tech that doesn't require a whole lot of integration, that kind of call it second-tier retailers or manufacturers can use, that allows for scale. Some of the other things we're doing, Peter, is, and you'll see an announcement coming out soon, but we're integrating our solution into other, I would say, much larger companies that have a full suite of software services. So they will plug us into, you know, a network of, you know, thousands of retailers where you can kind of turn on LiftForward if you need it. So that is going to offer us a lot of scale as we move forward.
And what's your vision for the future of LiftForward? I mean, you're in a great spot. You've got some really interesting technology, but where are you taking this long term?
You'll see some announcements coming out in this year where we're going into, you know, new countries that we have, you know, major countries that we haven't been in before. We haven't announced, but we're actually building the product there now in conjunction with clients. In the long run, you know, our tagline, and we have it on, I look at these kind of old T-shirts that we made a long time ago, but it says, we turn products into services. And, you know, we had that back in, you know, 2013 before, you know, before all this came. And we started to take a look at that again and put that back. We're starting to, you're going to go back and make some new T-shirts because it's coming forefront now. But overall, the vision is that, you know, most products, you know, over, you know, $300 were, it's offered through LiftForward for kind of monthly pricing. We want to be that platform that this all goes through. So it's all about, for us, on a go-forward basis, scale.
Makes sense. Well, it's a fascinating story. Jeffrey, we'll have to leave it there. Really appreciate you coming on the show today. Thanks so much.
Peter, thank you for having me. Great seeing you again.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for listening. Please go ahead and give the show a review on the podcast platform of your choice and go tell your friends and colleagues about it. Anyway, on that note, I will sign off. I very much appreciate you listening, and I'll catch you next time. Bye.